Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Again this month, you'll find a special offer enclosed on Grandy & Associates' other tape series for technicians called Service Sense. If you're enjoying the business tapes, we know you will love the Service Sense tape series as well. Just fill in the enclosed form and mail or fax in your order today. The search for quality outside salespeople is second only to finding and hiring quality technicians. As Charlie Greer will tell you on the tape, if your company is growing and you are still in the field selling, it's time for a change. This month, Charlie will present enough information for you to find and hire the top salespeople in your area. Charlie answered a classified ad for a new sales trainee in a large residential HVAC company, and the industry hasn't been the same since. With no previous HVAC experience, he closed his first sales lead his first week on the job and eventually went on to become the sales manager and marketing director for one of the country's largest residential service and replacement companies. Since 1989, Charlie has traveled the country recruiting and training salespeople, proving that his sales techniques work in companies of all sizes in all kinds of markets, from big cities to the backwoods, from one-man shops to large companies. Charlie is the president of the national sales and service training firm HVAC Profit Boosters, and he is a well-known speaker and writer, and his articles appear regularly in Contracting Business Magazine. Now, let's relax and find out how to find and hire outside salespeople.
A lot of owners of service contracting companies started out as service techs themselves. Some of them have gone from trainees or apprentices working at minimum wage to millionaires. And those are the people we want to talk about today. They come from all kinds of cities, are found in all kinds of companies, and have all kinds of backgrounds. They've been all kinds of people, from greedy to giving, from honest, hardworking individuals to not so honest, hardworking individuals. But they've all got one thing in common. They're not running their own sales calls. If you happen to be the owner of a contracting business and you're still running your own sales calls, I'd like to have a word with you. Which controls the profit side of your business? Is it sales or is it management? Let me put it this way. If sales increase and the money, inventory, purchasing, training, and supervision of employees is slack, will profits increase or decrease? So, will increased sales solve all your problems? Not if your company isn't being run conscientiously. Whose job is it to run the company? Do you want to grow your company? What if, instead of running sales calls, you applied all that time to planning, training, and supervising your employees, staying on top of changes in your industry, and acquiring other companies? Here's another question. Would you expect a full-time sales professional to do all that in addition to sales? No. Then why are you doing that to yourself? What do you think a company owner's job is? Should the owner of a company work in the business or on the business? It's been said that the only reason to start a company is to eventually sell it. But how can you sell it if you're the sales effort? The goal of every service contractor should be to set the company up so that it can run without you. And that means hiring a full-time, professional sales staff. Some of the benefits to having a sales professional on staff are they take a full-time job off the owner's shoulders. It employs at least one person in the company whose full-time job is to bring in high-dollar jobs. Salespeople that are paid on a commission basis tend to bring in business year-round, despite any rumors of a slow season. Full-time sales professionals will do the necessary follow-up on jobs requiring more time to sell than the owner or service technicians have to devote to sales. And it allows the owner of the company to work as an owner, manager, and not as a salesman. If you're like most service contractors, you have neither the money nor the inclination to pay a salary over a lengthy training period. You need a professional salesperson who, with a minimum of training, can start selling jobs and earning commissions the very first week on the job, eliminating the need for a large draw or training salary. Fortunately for you, true sales professionals are not merely willing to work on a straight commission basis, they actually want to be compensated in that manner. Now, why would someone want to work on straight commission? Well, working on straight commission means you're your own boss. You have to be responsible, but basically you can work as much as you want or as little as you want. You make as much money as you want or you make as little as you want. Now, in order to find someone, possibly an individual from outside of your industry, to start working for you for little or no draw and to work on a straight commission basis, you'll need to have your act together. That means your company will have to be salesperson friendly. Before hiring anyone, you need to prepare yourself and your company, then select the right individual. Good sales positions are difficult to find. In fact, it's more difficult for a good salesperson to find a good sales job than it is for an employer with an opening in a really good sales position to find a good salesperson. A good sales position can be defined by taking a close look at the major aspects of the job. First, I'll list all of them, then I'll cover them in a bit more detail. They are lead generation and lead source. This could also be described as lead quantity and lead quality. Income potential. Transportation. Responsibilities other than sales. Their supervisor and the amount of supervision they'll receive. Career opportunities and the potential for advancement. The work area itself. Expenses. Their co-workers. Health benefits, the retirement plan and continuing education benefits. The company stability. Their territory. The sales aids they'll have. The training they'll receive. And is the company organized and salesman friendly? Let's start with a talk about lead generation and lead quality. Leads generated from a telemarketing room are typically your weakest, and for salespeople, one of the least desirable lead sources. Leads generated by incoming phone calls due to advertising, and especially repeat customers, are a much better source of leads. Among the least desirable sales positions are those where no leads are supplied, and the salesperson is required to prospect, either by telephone or going door to door, like insurance salespeople. Lead quantity. Any experienced sales professional you interview will require as to the lead sources, the number of leads you've been generating, and what the dollars and commissions paid on those jobs have amounted to. Salespeople are constantly being given blue sky predictions during interviews of how many leads you've got and how many sales are made, only to learn that after quitting one employer because there were no leads, their new employer has even fewer leads. So take my advice and get your documentation together prior to your first interview. If you're not currently using a lead tracking system, you can still count the number of leads you ran last year by sorting through your pile of old bids and proposals you wrote and counting them up. That number, plus the number of sales you made last year, is the total number of leads your company generated. And don't worry about it if your sales over the last 12 months was a small amount that won't be impressive or show an attractive income for a sales professional. Say you're conducting an interview. You've got a candidate for the sales position in front of you and things are going well. You'd like to see this person come to work for you, and you're beginning to understand what I meant about the importance of your making a favorable impression. How do you handle it when the question of sales volume and income potential comes up when you can only document an earning potential of, say, $20,000, which isn't very impressive income potential for a professional salesperson? I've heard a lot of company owners who've been doing their own sales and were trying to hire their first salesperson conclude their summary of the sales and leads figures with, "And the commissions paid on those jobs would have amounted to $20,000. And that's with me doing all the selling myself, just on a part-time basis when I can fit it in." They might even add, "And I'm not a very good salesman. I figure a real salesman could do it better than me. I miss out on a lot of bids that I know someone who is a little better salesman than me, or could have had a little more time, could have gotten." When I'm recruiting a salesman for a small company, I'll be very upfront with them and cover what's been done for lead generation, which may be basically nothing, except for an occasional newspaper ad that the manufacturer or distributor set them up for, or something like that. Then I'll show them the number of leads run and the sales volume for the previous 12 months and conclude with, "The commissions for those sales would have been $20,000. Now, those sales were the easy ones, and that's what you get just for showing up." Then I'll pause for a moment and get very serious and ask, "Now, what are you going to bring to the party? What are you going to do to bring in more leads and sales? That's a salesman's job, isn't it? If the person says something lame like, I'll know better how to generate leads once I get the job, I lose interest fast. Now, if I'm interviewing someone who'll probably get the job, he or she will respond by saying something like, will the customer files be available to me so that once I'm familiar with your product, I'll be able to go through them and seek out and contact the most likely prospects for a sale? If they come up with something like that, their background checks out okay and they're willing to take the position, they can pretty much have it. Your next area of concern about a sales job is the transportation. Should you supply a vehicle or a car allowance? It's not necessary, but you can if you want to. Most professional salespeople are used to using their own automobile for business. It's very common in the sales field. Should your salespeople drive one of your trucks? If you want them to. One nice thing about supplying a truck or a car allowance is that you won't have to listen to a lot of complaints about how they're spending their money for gas in a car to run these lousy leads you give them that are really just a free customer service because the commission they earn on a small job won't even pay their gas to get there and back. Of course, when they go out and run some of these lousy leads you give them and come back with an upgraded sale, well, that's a different story. Regardless of who pays for the vehicle, the customer will expect your salesperson's vehicle to have company identification on it. So if you don't supply your salespeople with marked vehicles, you should at least supply them with magnetic signs. Now let's talk about responsibilities other than sales. I say make it none. You're paying someone to sell, and that's all you're paying for. Any time spent doing anything else is non-productive time for a salesperson. Now, just to make sure you know what I'm talking about, here's a list of what a salesperson is not. A salesperson is not a purchasing agent, a job supervisor, an auditor, or accountant. A salesperson is not an advertising or marketing specialist. You know what I say to salespeople who want me to start spending a lot of money to put my name in front of the public? I say, tell you what, you call every one of my customers, beginning with the service calls we ran today, and when you're done with that, I'll spend some serious money on advertising. A salesperson's also not a warehouse manager or a parts runner. Now, what if you're willing to pay them to do some of the things that need to be done? I say, hire someone else and pay them to do that. Listen, if salespeople could be or wanted to be something else, they'd be doing that. And salespeople are notoriously bad with paperwork, so why try to fit a square peg into a round hole? Now, how much supervision should they get? The questions often arise, what time should I make my people come in the morning? What should I make my people do when they're not running leads? How do I control the sales leads? The paperwork and lead generation control the leads, and you're going to hire responsible, ambitious adults who don't require supervision. Do you need to meet with your salespeople twice a week? Yes. Do you need to stay aware of their goals and how you and your company can help them meet their goals? Yes. Should you have to tell them what time to come in or what to do when they're not running leads? No. Don't do it. If you've got a shirker on staff who isn't producing, don't fire him or her. Just run an ad in the paper looking for a new salesperson. They'll get the hint. It's funny. That alone often causes sales to increase, if you know what I mean. And if it doesn't, then go ahead and hire someone else. Sometimes the best way to increase an existing salesperson's volume is to hire an additional salesperson. Now we'll talk about the supervisor. That's you. As I mentioned previously, good salespeople are easier to find than good sales jobs. And a good sales job begins with having a good boss. Don't micromanage, and please don't yell at your salespeople. You're going to have to get someone with a high ego level that could go just about anywhere and get a job. So don't drive them off. People can go anywhere and be abused. They're also going to want to look at career options and opportunities. Does your company have growth potential? Can your employees grow with you? You'll need to be able to answer those questions for job candidates. The work area and workstation? Well, please, don't hire a salesperson without giving them a desk, phone, and filing cabinet. They don't need a plush private office, but they do need a quiet place where they can use the phone without a lot of yelling and joking going on in the background. A lot of people stay with a job just because they like their office. And forget about the theory that salespeople don't need a place to work in the office because they should be out running sales calls. You want them to feel like part of the family, and you want them to become familiar with your company, its customers, and its employees, so they'll need a place where they can feel at home. Furthermore, when they're in the office, they'll field a lot of the phone inquiries that you've probably been getting but haven't gone anywhere because no one was around to follow through on them. As far as expenses go, well, most jobs in service sales don't really have a lot of expenses, and that's one thing it's got over a lot of other sales jobs. The only expenses I can see your salespeople incurring are for their automobile and maybe for some small hand tools or their clothes. The employer pays for the phone, the pager, and the postage. Now, cell phones make the job easier and enhance productivity, but be careful about giving a salesperson free, unlimited use of one. Instead, have them supply their own cell phone, then pay them a flat rate of $20 to $30 per month for its use. With regards to coworkers, it would be nice if everybody got along. Your salespeople should be smart enough to know that service techs are their bread and butter. Two or three service techs that really like a salesman will keep him or her busy and ask nothing in return other than that they provide the customer with service that will make them proud. If they don't like your salesperson, forget it. They'll never submit any leads and your service sales will go down the drain. Now, whatever health benefits, retirement plan, and continuing education benefits you supply to the rest of your employees, you should offer to your salespeople. Don't make them an outsider. And, of course, everyone wants to work for a company with some stability. Matter of fact, you'll find that over half the salespeople that apply for a job with you will have left at least one company because it went out of business on them. The only thing you'll need to determine at that point is whether or not they caused the company to go out of business. The comment I'll make on the subject of territory is to make sure that you are not your salesperson's biggest competitor. If you're doing your own sales right now, get out of it when you hire a salesperson. You are unfair competition. If two salespeople are needed to handle your lead load, then hire another. And these are the items that a sales professional will consider important. This is what determines if they will accept a position with your company or not. In order to hire someone from outside of your industry, it will be important that you appear organized enough for him or her to start at a full run. They won't have the time or the know-how to organize your sales department. This means you'll need, number one, a simplified pricing system. That usually means a menu pricing guide of some sort that has package prices for simple jobs. Number two, you'll need to get together for your salesperson a presentation book. This book will have copies of awards, diplomas, and membership certificates, warranty certificates, copies of customer testimonials, visual aids such as product literature and third-party articles, a history of your company, copies of proof of insurance, and photographs of your service staff. I personally use one loose-leaf notebook with dividers for both my presentation book and my price book. I put everything in page protectors and keep it neat. You'll also need customer-friendly and new salesperson-friendly sales contracts, or as I like to call them, work orders, that are pre-printed with all the usual products and services you supply that clearly state your warranties. As a rule, in order to make a sale, the salesperson will need to acquire information. So the fourth thing you'll need is a customer survey form, also known as a needs analysis form, that has all the common questions you normally ask when running a sales call. Of course, you'll need a commission sheet and record-keeping systems. You'll probably also need to be set up with consumer financing. Try to establish relationships with at least two lending institutions, one for people with good credit, and one willing to take people with not-so-good credit. And can you imagine hiring salespeople without having an organized job flow and paperwork procedure? I've been in companies where no one even knows the first step in creating a job folder. It's done differently every time. You don't want a new salesperson to go out and make a sale, only to bring it back to the office and find that no one knows what to do with it and no one wants it. So you'll need a written, organized job flow. Lastly, you'll need a written, organized training program, which can put a salesperson on the street running the simpler sales calls after a maximum of 1 week's training. Now let's take a look at your choices in hiring salespeople. Aren't they pretty much limited to someone who either already knows your product but doesn't know sales, or already knows sales but doesn't know your product? Now, which are you more qualified to teach? Sales or your product? If you're like most people in the service industries, you'll probably say, our product. And don't go getting nervous when I talk about training someone. If you're the owner of a company, then you've probably already trained people on your product, and the person you hire will already know how to sell. Training a new salesperson on the technical aspects of your industry is not that difficult when you choose the right person. And it's certainly easier and less time-consuming than running all of your own leads. So how much technical knowledge is needed in sales? Let's begin by stating that a sales professional in any field will spend a lifetime learning the technical aspects of the industry. But what does a salesperson need to know just to start selling? Well, they'll need to know how to, number one, identify the customer's needs, number two, make the proper recommendations, number three, price it correctly, and number four, talk about it correctly. Remember, we're talking about hiring and training a salesperson, not a design engineer and not a repair technician. When I train new people in heating and air conditioning sales, I concentrate primarily on terminology. One of the easiest jobs to break into any field is what is normally called the replacement or retrofit market. In those cases, most of the design work was done when the original equipment was designed and installed. Even when modifications may be in order, walking into a situation a number of years after the product's been installed and used, the salesperson has the advantage of seeing how it operated in its present design, making it a lot easier to make the appropriate recommendations and modifications. Now we'll go right to the interviewing process. Here's our goal in hiring salespeople. We want someone who is capable of learning enough to begin selling at least the simpler jobs by the end of the second week on the job and possibly by the end of the first week. For most sales positions, in order to do this, this individual will need to, number one, already know enough about selling so that all you have to teach is the basics of your field. Number two, be mathematically inclined. And number three, be mechanically inclined. A lot has been said about salespeople not needing any kind of mechanical aptitude, but not on this tape. Whereas I've seen people who literally couldn't start a lawnmower do quite well in sales, your best bet will be to get someone who already knows how to turn a wrench, work on their car, build a house, or at least do something mechanical. Salespeople are leery of going to work at a disorganized place, so step one is to have the documentation and support materials you need to have a successful interview before the first interview. And those are product brochures. If you have service agreements, have copies of them out as well as a customer list. No, you're not going to give your customer list to them, but service agreement customer lists are one of the most impressive things you can show a prospective salesperson. Your training materials and an outline of the training program. Check with your distributor or trade association to see if they can help you with this. You'll need to have your sales log ready. This can be anything from a list to a chart. Sales agreements from recently sold jobs are another very influential piece of documentation that you can show a potential candidate. It proves that sales are being made and that you're not talking pie in the sky. Have some commission sheets from those jobs prepared. Whether you've got a salesperson on staff or you're doing your own sales, write up some commission sheets on some recent jobs and show them what the commissions would have been. Your lead log, or at least the number of leads your company has generated over the last year, advertising samples, and of course you want to have your price book, your presentation book, and all the other items your salesperson will need to be successful that I listed previously. Step two of the hiring process is to run a classified ad in the sales position section of your local newspaper. Make sure you place it in the sales help wanted section of the classifieds. Make it a fairly large ad with a border around it. List some of the benefits of working for your company and selling your product. An example of an ad might start with the title Outside Sales with four bullet points below it. Some examples are company provided leads, 100% customer guarantee, $200 average commission, and training provided. Then the following sentences. No industry experience required, but direct outside sales experience a must. For details over the phone, call, then put your name in it, at, and then list the name, address, and phone number of your company. Don't make this a blind ad where you leave out the company name, and do use your real name. Rip-off sales jobs run blind ads with phony names, and experienced salespeople know this. By the way, $200 average commission is used here as an example. Even if you don't currently have commissioned salespeople, determine what the average commission would have been on all the jobs sold over the last 30 to 90 days and use that figure. Step 3 of the hiring process is to tell your receptionist you're running an ad for salespeople and how you want the calls taken. Step 4 is the telephone screening interview. In-person interviews are time-consuming, and you'll find that of the 24 people that will contact you that first week, only 4 or 5 of them will meet the minimum qualifications for an in-person interview, so you'll want to screen them heavily over the telephone before scheduling an interview. Here is a list of qualifications required for an in-person interview. Number 1, a direct sales background. For best results, if the sales position is for primarily residential sales, give salespeople currently working in outside residential sales preference over candidates working in commercial sales. If it's a commercial sales position, give candidates working in commercial sales top priority. If you're going to pay on straight commission, they should currently be working on that basis, preferably selling an item with an average sale price of around what their average sale will be if they come to work for you. If your product will require financing, they should have experience in financing. Candidates currently working in jobs that require them to provide their own leads take preference over candidates who have 100% of their leads furnished for them. You want this person to have won sales awards. If you schedule an in-person interview, ask that they bring their awards in and show them to you. Of course, they want a good telephone personality and a certain amount of assertiveness. Applicants should gently push for an in-person interview and not allow you to put them off. Applicants with experience in your industry must be at least twice as impressive as those without experience in your industry. A lot of times people ask, well, what about our service techs? Should I just promote one of them to salesman? First of all, in most fields, qualified technical help is more difficult to find than qualified sales help. So I would encourage them to stay where they are. But if it's obvious that they're going to try to make it in sales either for you or for one of your competitors, give them an interview. Call them into the office, and in as non-threatening and non-confrontational manner as possible, ask the following questions. What do you see the job description of salesperson as being? Can you describe for me what you see as a typical day in the life of a salesperson? As a salesperson, where would you get your leads? How much money do you think salespeople make? How are salespeople paid? What kind of hours do you see yourself working? Whose car would you drive? How many miles do you think salespeople drive in a week? What do you know about consumer financing? What would your sales procedure be? What would you say to close a sale? Now, the answers to those questions are usually, well, I don't know, which naturally indicates a complete lack of understanding about the job of salesperson. Should by chance the answers be satisfactory, show the tech your price book and ask, do you think you can sell at these prices? If the answer is yes, I would ask, do you want to run a lead? And if the answer to that is yes, then I would give that person the very next lead that comes in, whether it's a good lead or a bad lead, and see what happens. Then after the lead is run, go over it with the tech and take it one step at a time from there. Now, personally, I know very few techs who have tried to make the conversion to sales succeed. But some of them have done quite well. Now, what about your son or your brother-in-law? Same thing. Don't put someone in a sales position just because you can't find anything else for them to do. If they're not good at anything else, more than likely they won't be good at sales either. What about someone who tried sales, quit, and think they'd like to try again? Yeah, right. They're fixing to remember why they quit sales in the first place. No, you don't want to interview them. Now, during the screening interview over the phone, keep your side of the conversation brief. Let the applicants talk all they want. You want to listen. Your purpose at this time is to gain information, not give information. Tell them the minimum requirements for an in-person interview and ask them for details on their background. Take notes. Get specific dates on their job history and find out how much money they made and why they left each job over the last 5 to 10 years. Ask them what about the ad interested them and clarify any misunderstandings they may have regarding the ad copy. Let them know that there is some math involved in the job and ask about their math skills. Tell them that while they're not being required to work on, install, or repair equipment, this is a job in a mechanical or technical field, and to expound on their mechanical abilities, or lack thereof. If they will be driving their personal vehicle, you might as well cover that up front, too. If that turns some people away, fine. But you may be surprised at how many salespeople expect to drive their own vehicle. Ask about the make, model, age, and condition of the vehicle. Your salesperson's car will be your customer's first visual impression of your company. Salespeople driving black sports cars and junkers have just not done well for me. Does the applicant drive a car with which you wish to be identified? If they want to know if this is a straight commission job and the answer is yes, let them know. If that turns them off right away, well, that's fine. Then they ask what the source of leads are, which is also fine. They're probably checking to see if this is a high-pressure telemarketing kind of operation, or if the job entails all prospecting and cold calling, which you're nuts to do for under $100,000 a year. You can inform them that you're a service company, and that practically every day of the year, someone who is already a customer of yours calls in for service, and that you have a system in place to help them convert those repair calls to sales. They may ask about what hours they'll be expected to keep. I usually respond by stating, I'm flexible. What hours do you see yourself keeping? I know what hours a salesperson needs to work in order to be successful, but I want to know what they think. For instance, if they're going to be in residential sales, they ought to expect to have a minimum of one call per night Monday through Thursday, and that Saturday morning is their best selling time. If personal obligations interfere with them working those hours, then they probably ought to look for a job in commercial sales. But I don't tell them that. If they don't say that to me, then I assume they either don't have a lot of drive or just don't have much of a grasp on in-home selling, and I eliminate them from the running. If they ask about it, tell them your company's history. Them asking is a good sign. Unless the applicant says something that really turns me off, I let the conversation go on for as long as they'll talk, which may be up to 45 minutes. If all goes well and I'd like to see them, we schedule an in-person interview. Now, don't give them directions on how to find your shop. Why? Because outside salespeople have got to be able to find their way around town by reading a map. During the conversation, just listen. Be yourself and be friendly and be professional. But don't appear too anxious to see them or too impressed. Why? Because salespeople need to be willing to follow up on a lead that doesn't sound all that promising. If they won't come out and see you because you didn't gush all over them, then they won't drive 50 miles to see someone who told them over the phone that they were just getting prices or intended to go with the lowest bidder, and you don't want them prejudging leads. You want them to diligently follow up on every possible sales opportunity. Step 5 of the recruiting process is the initial face-to-face interview. First, we'll talk about some of the things you want to look for. We'll cover some things that you want them to say, and then we'll cover what you should say. Here's a list of things you want to look for before even meeting the applicant. Number 1, a timely arrival. What can you expect from a prospective employee who arrives even 1 minute late for a job interview? What kind of message are you sending to job candidates who show up late, even by 1 minute, by hiring them? Shouldn't they be early? Number 2 would be attractive handwriting. It may seem strange to you, but I have seen a direct correlation between really attractive handwriting and really high sales volume. Most of the high-volume salespeople I've worked with have had nice handwriting. Number 3 is a completely filled-out job application. What kind of response can you expect from someone who writes, "See resume" in the job history section of an application when that person is asked to begin doing some paperwork that they might feel is redundant? They'll probably say, "See resume." Number 4, when it's time to meet the applicant, be aware of your first impression. Were the shoes shined? What was the choice of attire? Hands clean? Breath, body odor okay? What about eye contact? Watch out for excessive blinking, rolling the eyes, or looking away while speaking. Be leery of someone who clears the throat a lot or talks out of the side of their mouth. All of those things usually mean that they don't believe what they're saying. Number 5, were they prepared? Did they have a pad and a pen? Were they wearing a wristwatch? Could they provide references without borrowing your telephone book? Did they offer support materials such as diplomas, awards, and other documentation? Number 6, how does their professionalism stack up? Did they take notes? Did they ask questions? They should be able to warm you up, put you at your ease. I'd say the last thing is to go out and take a look at their car and make sure that they are driving what they told you they would be driving. Now let's cover their part of the interview, what you want them to say. First, ask them about the sales presentation they usually follow in their current job. You want them to follow a planned presentation and be able to outline it for you. Here's an example of what they might say. My sales presentation follows a standard 9-point one-call close technique beginning with a warm-up, followed by a needs analysis, a time commitment, then a tonight commitment. After that, we go into company story and features and benefits. Then I go into my pre-closes and trial closes. If I get the answers I'm looking for, I begin closing, opening with a simple assumptive close by beginning to get their help filling out the paperwork. If they don't stop me, I know I've got a sale. If they do stop me, I'll go into the return on investment close or the Ben Franklin close. I've got about 10 different closing techniques, and my last step is the post-close or the warm-down. You may not know what I just said, but these are all common terms among salespeople who have studied sales. If they say something like that to you, you've got every reason to believe that they're serious about sales and that they know how to sell. Following a planned presentation indicates the intelligence and the interest to analyze what they've done on the job and have been able to isolate what works and use it. Will you adapt it to some degree for each customer? Of course. But people that tell you that they don't believe in what they call a canned presentation are simply telling you in so many words that they really don't know what works. So don't hire a salesperson that can't outline a specific sales procedure that they normally follow. It's very common to meet professional salespeople whose sales presentation follows the same steps as yours, with the products being the only significant differences. And this is what you're looking for. Now, the second thing I want them to do during the interview is role play a few of their favorite closing techniques, especially on the three biggest price objections salespeople encounter. Price, price, and price. No, just kidding. The biggest sales objection is price. The second is I want to think it over. And the third is that all-time favorite, I want to get other bids. Anyone you hire must be able to do a convincing job of role-playing those objections with you using the product they currently sell as an example. Do not hire anyone who can't or won't role-play handling those objections with you. The third thing you'll look for in the interview is that they do have a high closing ratio at their current job and some documentation, such as call sheets or possibly some awards. You want them to have had formal sales training and read and study sales independently. You want to know that they set goals. They need to know your geographic area. People new in town usually do much better when they're not new in town anymore. An important thing is that they're not changing residence soon. What is the reason for leaving the previous address and changing jobs at the same time? Now that we've covered their part of the initial interview, what we're looking for them to say, now let's cover your part of the interview. Begin by going over your company's story using the presentation book you put together for them and advertising materials. Give them a basic job outline using other support materials and describe the training program. Ask them the same series of questions that I told you to ask one of your service technicians or other employees applying for this job. You inquired about their mechanical abilities over the phone. Now it's time to check them out. Find out if they can figure things out for themselves and see if they can work under fire. The way I usually do that is to take them to the back room and show them some of the equipment we work on. For instance, when I'm recruiting in heating and air conditioning, one of the things I have the applicant do is remove the doors from a furnace or two and put them back on. If they can do that, I'll give them a nut driver and have them open up a few access panels. Now, no coaching during this. They've got to be able to figure it out for themselves. In fact, I usually stand there acting all judgmental and intimidating while they're working. I might even say things like, "Well, it's right over there. Are you sure you know what you're doing?" We all have a good time, but I want to give them a little taste of what it's like out in the field when you've got a customer standing over you. You want to get feedback on everything that's been covered before discussing money. Why? Because I don't want someone taking the job exclusively for the money. I want to work with people who are doing something they want to do and are not simply a mercenary or a contract killer. So before discussing the money, I always ask, wait a minute, does this job seem interesting to you? And when they say yes, I'll say, why? What about it is interesting? Then I ask, is this the kind of product that you would enjoy selling? And when they say yes, I go, well, why? What about this product makes you think you'd enjoy selling it? Then I ask, do you think you'd enjoy working for this company? And when they say yes, I ask, why? What about this company makes you feel that you'd like to work here? Now, if the answers to all these questions is satisfactory, and we're both getting along, then go ahead and explain the commission structure and the manner and time frame in which they're paid. The first interview should take about 90 minutes. Step 6 of the recruiting process is to schedule a follow-up interview. You never, never hire a person on the first interview. Now, the applicant should bring this up, possibly even try to close you on hiring him or her by this time. But what you want to do is give applicants a homework assignment to be completed and brought in for the next interview. For instance, in heating and air conditioning recruiting, I'll show candidates a very simple room-by-room drawing of a home, a floor plan drawn to scale on graph paper, and I'll ask them if they think they could draw something like that. If they say yes, I ask them to draw one of their own home and bring it in with them on the follow-up interview. Then I show them the tags on an air conditioner furnace and ask them to bring me the model and serial numbers off the furnace and air conditioner from their own home. Right here is where you'll lose about half the people who seem like likely candidates for the job. Oh, they won't say anything directly to you. They just won't show up for that second interview. But I figure I might as well find out right now if they can't stand doing this, because it will be required on every lead I supply them with. You need to note that any mistakes, any uncooperativeness, any mannerisms or behavior you find annoying will be there from now on. Do not ignore this. This is your one chance in life to be completely judgmental. Remember that the people before you are putting their best foot forward. Right now, they are the best that you will ever see them. Now, step 7 is your activities between the two interviews. First of all, you want to verify their job history, their sales figures, their home telephone number, and their address. You want to call the applicants to see how easy or difficult they are to reach. Do not hire anyone you can't just call and reach by phone. Don't leave messages on the answering machine. Don't page someone on their pager. One concession I'll make is that I will consider leaving a message with a spouse. The situation I'm trying to avoid here is hiring someone that I already know dodges calls. Now, I don't object to people screening calls, and if you screen your own calls at home, fine. You see, you're not looking for a job right now. Make a concerted effort to reach them. Try in the evenings or over the weekend or early in the morning. When you do reach them, simply reconfirm your follow-up appointment. But if you can't reach them by phone before they return for their follow-up interview, even if you really want to hire them, don't. Thank them and tell them you'll be making your decision within the next 24 hours and that you'll be calling them. If they're looking for a job and they know you're going to call them, shouldn't they try to make themselves available? Now, the third thing I want you to do between interviews is to check their references. Most people go with gut feeling, but I'll tell you what. A background check with a private investigator takes very little time, costs very little money, and could possibly save you from making an uninformed decision. A thank you letter or a follow-up phone call by the applicant would indicate a real sense of professionalism. Step number 8 in the hiring process is the second interview. Begin by asking the applicant their feelings on the job. Then check their homework. Then you want to go over your expectations. Ask, how do you see yourself following up after installations? You don't want a love them and leave them kind of salesperson on your staff. Explain your feelings about the responsibility for leads, that they are expensive to obtain, that they are the property of the company, and that every lead must be run according to procedures and a full report made on the results of each lead. Ask them, what hours do you see yourself working? What time do you see yourself checking into the office? This is better than just stating the hours you want them to work and what time you want them to come in, which they may be inclined to agree with now, but disregard later. If you're an early riser and only want to work with other early risers, find out now whether or not they're a morning person. Show them all of the paperwork involved in the job. This will eliminate any of those, "You didn't tell me this job had so much paperwork," comments later. Go over any additional duties outside of selling, which, of course, should be none. Make certain they know what employee-provided tools and materials are required and any other non-reimbursable employee expenses they may incur. Tour the premises with them. Make sure the applicant has seen his or her work area and is satisfied with it. Review the commission structure and when they're paid to ensure a clear understanding of that. Then do some goal setting. Get serious about the number of leads you'll provide, the number of leads the salesperson will provide by calling on service invoices, calling old customers, the referrals, etc., the anticipated closing ratio, and the average commission. Make sure everyone has a realistic expectation about the money. If you think you might like to hire someone, but there are any things that would make you hesitant about it, say so now. State every concern you have and give the applicant the opportunity to explain or clarify these issues. For instance, if you're a non-smoker and the applicant has told you that he or she is also a non-smoker but smells like smoke, then I would say, ask about that. Now, if things are going really well and you are able to reach this person by phone and you think you've got yourself a winner, stop. Take a deep breath, then ask the job candidate these three questions. Number one, how many grandparents do you have living today and how is their health? Number two, other than yourself, who else's health should I worry about? And number three, what happens to your appointments when you have car trouble? Ever known anyone whose grandparents have died about 18 times? Two apiece for each of the nine jobs he's had? Also, it's very common for a new hire to suddenly need to go out of town to care for a sick relative or fiancé, or had to take a few days off work due to car trouble. Now, why would that be? After all, they just started a new job. I think maybe it's because when you hire someone, it's because they made a good impression on you. And when they were out going to interviews and reading the want ads, they made an equally good impression on someone else. And I think that sometimes someone accepts their second choice on a job because you got back with them and made a hiring decision first, and they're still finishing up on unfinished interviews with other potential employers. And we certainly don't want that to happen. No part-timers either. Make certain everyone you hire from the insurance field knows this especially. By the way, insurance agents and people from the replacement windows business and aluminum siding have given me the best performance. Now, here's a list of what salespeople have given me the worst performance. Number one is car salesmen. Actually, car salespeople tend to be pretty good closers. The problem is that when things get tough, they'll get a job selling cars again. Now, if your only concern is that when you hire someone, they take off quickly and at least earn enough to pay for themselves while they're still under your employ, that's okay. Then you enter that situation knowing that they won't be around long. But if you're looking for a career employee, your best bet is to stay away from car salespeople. Also, stay away from people in business for themselves doing their own home improvements. Stay completely away from them. They'll either be doing a lot of side jobs, some of whom they acquired through the leads you supplied them with, or they'll earn enough from you to eventually become one of your competitors. That's ditto for painting contractors. I also try to avoid ex-Yellow Pages salespeople. They tend to get discouraged if they don't get a sale on every order. Ex-competitors or your competitors' ex-salespeople. They may know the business, but I've found that when ex-contractors go to work for someone else, it almost becomes their sole purpose in life to prove that no one can make it in that business, if you know what I mean. Now, don't hire anyone that you don't like. Don't hire anyone you think is weird. Don't hire anyone you feel is too aggressive or too assertive. Don't hire anyone that you feel intimidated by. Don't hire anyone because you feel sorry for them or to be nice. definitely do not hire anyone without doing a background check. Don't hire anyone without having your sales department ready. Don't hire anyone you won't feel proud to introduce to your service technicians. And don't hire anyone if you don't have any leads. Also, don't be tempted to hire anyone who has set up sales departments before, has had an income of over $100,000 as a sales manager and will set yours up, but has no industry experience. They won't want to sell for you. They'll just want to spend your money and be a manager. And by the way, don't hire anyone with the understanding that this person will eventually become your sales manager. You want to hire someone who wants to be a salesperson, not a manager. The question invariably arises, should you get a psychological profile done? Well, I've tried several of these testing devices, and they haven't proven all that reliable for me. Hire the right people and be ready for them when they start, and training them is the easiest part of prospering with salespeople. Average people become successful by surrounding themselves with above-average people. Make your company and yourself attractive to success-oriented people, and your highest dreams will become your reality.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. A postage-paid response card is also enclosed. Also, don't forget the special offer on our Service Sense tape series. Send in your order today. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.